This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. I managed to squeeze in a few podcast interviews in and around ISE last week, and this is the first, a long-planned and finally realized talk with Sam Phoenix, who is the VP of R&D for Planar and Layard. That puts her in the middle of everything happening in the display market right now, from LCD and OLED to light field displays. We spoke right at the blended company booth in the middle of the show, so it's a little loud. And some people just flat ignored how there were people with the microphone in the middle and kept on talking around us. Oh well, it's a really great, frank discussion about all the emerging display tech out there.
All right, we're at the Layard booth, or Planar booth, or what do you want to call it?
You can call it the Layard booth. That's the company name. We have lots of sub-brands, lots of different products.
And you're the... What is your title here?
I'm the Vice President of Research and Development for the International Business Group. So I'm responsible for the business, everything outside of domestic China.
Wow. So as a result, you're probably in China quite a bit.
I am in China quite a bit, but I have a global engineering team. So, you know, we acquired IVIS last year. So I have a team in Germany of engineers. Planar, we had a team in the south of France, and now I have some additional people that came from IVIS that are also in the south of France, and it's not a horrible place to go visit. It's in Saint-Afrique and Albi. It's beautiful. And then I have my guys in Oregon at our headquarters, and then I have some people in China as well. So
you've been doing specialty display, if you want to call it that, for quite some time. You have seen LED go from something that people generally knew about as outdoor billboards and stadium replay boards and that sort of thing to today, when you can't turn around without seeing a big ass LED board somewhere.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted to speak with you is I'm so freaking confused by the terminology and what I'm looking at. And I would imagine if I am, and I've invested some time to try to be knowledgeable about this stuff, what's it like for all these other people?
It's very confusing. And there's a lot of, you know, we love our three-letter acronyms and we love our marketing buzzwords. And there's a lot of, let's say, alternative facts that are being touted around. So, yeah, I can see as a customer, it can be incredibly confusing.
Yeah.
I think one of the advantages that we brought, you know, with the Layard acquiring Planar and now IVIS, like, when we talk to customers, and you can see this in the booth, like we have this one set up for a control room space where we just put tiled LCD, direct view LED, and rear projection cube all side by side, but they know when they come to us, like, we're not tied to one of those display technologies. We're just going to talk to them about their application and then recommend the one based on their budget and their use case that's going to work for them. And if you look at Planar's history, I mean, that's kind of... So Planar was a spinoff from Tektronix, like, in the early 80s, and invented electroluminescent displays. But over that time, you know, it's been many versions of Planar. You know, we've been in very vast variety of markets. And we've adopted all different kinds of display technologies. So we've had OLED, we've had EL, we've had rear projection cube, we've had projection, we've had LCD, we've had tiled LCD, now we have direct view LED. So, so we've kind of just evolved, like, as the technologies become viable for the commercial application that we're focused in, which is digital signage, we adopt them as products. So you'll not see OLED here in our booth. And it's not because we don't know how it works or that we couldn't make a product, but we just look at it for the commercial application. Like, you know, last year we celebrated 30 years of OLED at SID, right, at Display Week, which you're going to be there this year. I'm very excited about that. And the inherent problem of image retention, it's not solved. I mean, this is, and many smart people have been working on it for a very long time.
Right.
And for a commercial application, just trying to explain to people, like, no, you can't ever put static, like, it's just, they just don't get it, you know? And it is beautiful. The color gamut's great. They're a visually stunning display. But again, for commercial applications, I just... We've chosen not to productize it because of the downsides.
Planar dabbled with it about 3 years ago.
We have a transparent OLED. And the reason we did it for that was we have had a transparent product for like 25 years, right?
Yeah.
And we had a transparent LCD. There's always a challenge with that because it's not emissive. You got to have a backlight. So you got to have like this microwave box thing, right? It's just not compelling. And I actually saw the transparent OLED in the lab in Korea before it was announced. They showed it to me on a trip and I was super excited about it. And we were the first ones to show it here at ISC
in
2015, I believe. We leant way forward, built that market, and then production stopped very suddenly. And we were disappointed.
Yes.
But the reason why we found it so compelling is we had the use case, and everybody who was buying the transparent LCD, they're like, we want it to be like a window.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to have to put a box.
Yeah.
And there's backlights. So, you know, museums is a great application for our retail.
Yeah.
So you put your precious dinosaur bones in a light box. Not so great, right?
Yeah, so it's not all that great for shoes, but...
No, so having it an emissive...
No.
Having an emissive technology, amazing. And because it's transparent, the whole image retention thing is mitigated because the whole point of a transparent display is you want to see through it. So you don't want to have content. And the worst thing for OLED is white, right?
Yeah.
Full on, which would make it opaque. So we already had to like teach people you got to make content especially for this display. And because the application was you really want to look through it, you don't want to have static content on the front of it. We saw, okay, this is a situation where OLED can work. And
So now you have with what's going on about LG and OLED, but you can go to the OLED you could call it the OLED booth, but the LG booth, there's like OLED everywhere. Like they're pushing
All in with it. They're really invested in it. And again, visually stunning. And maybe there are some applications that people are willing to pay the price or they're willing to spend a lot of money on the content or trying to create a special look, like the flexible display, the wallpaper. I mean, it's pretty cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for like tried and true standard digital signage, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It's more of a creative solution, I would say.
Yeah. So let's talk, because I'm talking to you about planar and layer. Let's talk about planar and layer. How, when you have hundreds, really, of companies, or let's say scores at least of LED companies showing their pots and pans, how do you distinguish what Layar/Planar does versus all the other ones other than the simple fact that you're the largest manufacturer?
Yeah, so we're number one, and Layar pioneered fine pitch LED. They were the first ones to kind of invent the technology and bring it to market. We are the market leader, as Feature Source kindly noted. But for us, you know, Planar and Layar, we're a solutions company in the sense that we don't just sell like widgets. You know, we try to understand what our customers are going to do with the products.
Right.
And then we try to design a product that fits that need. So we have lots of different products, and that's because we're thinking about what are they going to do with it. So for example, our first fine pitch LED product, actually before is how Layard and Planar met. They were our supplier. We had this matrix tiled LCD, incredibly successful product, which is a very different architecture. So unlike sort of standard video wall, the rack is where we keep the power and the video process in. So it's a very thin, and it comes with an integrated mount. It's less than 4 inches thick. It's ADA compliant. And our customers really valued that principle because it takes all the failures away from the wall. And we had at least one customer who had installed a traditional video wall, and it was in a very visible location, and every time they had a failure, they had to pipe and drape and shut down and do it overnight. In our panel, they could pop one in and out in 10 or 15 minutes, and they weren't getting the failures.
Mm-hmm.
So people appreciated that architecture, and so when we brought a fine pitch product to this market, we said, well, let's follow the same principle. So Direct Light came from that, like front accessible, we were the first ones to do it, less than 4 inches thick, integrated mount, integrated, you know, processing and power in the rack, and people valued that value prop. And it was cool for my group, for the engineers, because you know, we actually got to design something, right? We weren't just taking some from China and reselling it.
Yeah.
So it was thoughtful. And we have like a lot of sales tools that help customers understand. So they can go on our website, there's a wall calculator, load their content, build their wall, see what it would look, download the wiring. It's all the same, whether they were buying tiled LCD or LED, they had the same tools.
Yeah.
So it was familiar. Yeah. What else do we do that I think differentiates? Again, like aside from designing products that are specifically targeted at an application. So, you know, if you look at, say, broadcast, where we've had a lot of success in LED, we really understand what they're trying to do. So when we go talk to our broadcast customers, we have people from the industry that work with us, like in our company, that understand their workflow, and they're able to communicate back to us for the roadmap. So we're designing things with their pain points in mind.
Right.
And then we're continuing to innovate. Like I have, so I came, you know, up through Barco, so I learned my good way to measure success and track progress. I have KPIs. Barco is kind of famous for that kind of thing. And one of the metrics that I feel is important is the amount of time my team are able to spend on innovation, so just free creative thinking. Mm-hmm. And I know it's maybe like the Google buzzword or whatever, but yeah, we try to shoot for 10%. A pretty low bar on what gets approved. Like, basically, you do one slide that says, this is what I need to do, this is the steps I need to do to get there, so much money I need for the project, and I'm like, go for it. And it just gives them the flexibility and the freedom to experiment a little bit. And we've had some really cool things come out of that, like this touch film that you see on the PLTS on this wall, where we have a removable film that goes on top of the LEDs and provides a very nice touch surface that's unique to us. Mm-hmm. That was one of those that sort of came out of one of those play projects where we were like,
goes back a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I think originally I was like, I want a spray can. And then we started thinking about your phone. You know, you get a film for your phone to protect it. Like, why couldn't we do that for LED? Because trying to put a big sheet of glass over an LED wall did make a touch surface.
So how does the heat get out?
Well, it doesn't have to. We have thermal management in the product. And the film is not, like, blocking light. It's not blocking energy. So, yeah.
So that's a big thing for me in that conventional surface-mounted LEDs, they're fragile. We're standing right beside one. If I decide to be malicious, I could take this water bottle and pull a bunch of them off.
Please don't.
No, I'd wait till you looked away.
Get your backpack and scrape right out of your
head.
They are fragile. And when you get to the smaller pitches, when it's like 0.7, which we had a 0.7 4K wall here last year, and I was standing in front of it for the whole show because I was terrified, like, don't touch it.
So I'm seeing, you mentioned putting a film on one product. I've seen what some people call potting it, or there's solutions, or there's various
glue
ways.
Glue on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we actually have that. We call it Aero LED.
Okay.
So the trademark name, because we have Aero, we've gone glass bonding on our LCD products for many years in our factory in Oregon. So on tiled LCD and large flat, we're taking glass and optically bonding. So given that principle, we recognize LED is fragile. We need to think of something. And so we have Aero LED, which is an epoxy that's applied in the factory. And I have on the other side of this wall, we can go look at it.
Sure.
To protect it.
So you're doing what a lot of other companies, is that just going to be kind of table stakes in the future for anything that's going to be public? You want to have it protected? Or are you taking a haircut when you do that?
Well, it's more expensive, but it's not a huge premium. I think the thing that people should look at when they look at that kind of solution is it took us a while to develop the process, and we have a lot of years of experience, to get it uniform and to not add seams. It's a seamless technology. You don't want to add seams, right?
Yeah.
And so you'll see it done poorly, especially at fine pitch, all over the show.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, I mean, I can see the grid lines, and I can see almost, in some cases, it looks like a film that's been put on it, and it's a little bubbly in places and so on.
Because it's hard to get the right chemical formula. It's hard to get the curing process down. The tolerances, like, think about 0.9 millimeter. I mean, the tolerances are incredibly tight. So you have to you have to have it. And if you're going to make money, you've got to be able to do it over and over exactly the same again and again.
Right.
So
it's one thing to show something at a trade show and say, here we are, and another to mass manufacture. And
exactly. You can do it once, well, yeah. But do it a million times, well, that's a little trickier.
But to go back to, is that something that we're just going to see everywhere once it gets refined? Because to me, it just makes sense that you protect these things.
Yeah, I think you will. And, you know, some of the challenges, and we still have it, is our solution's quite shiny. It's quite reflective. But we've tried, and we're still experimenting. We've tried different treatments to create more of a less reflective surface.
Like a matte finish.
More of a matte finish, but we won't want to sacrifice uniformity, and so it's not ready. So we're not, it's not here, we're not showing it, but we're continuing to research to figure out a solution for that.
Whereas you may have smaller companies here who are ready because they need to be ready because they're at a show and they need to show something.
Yeah, and I would, again, challenge the uniformity, both on luminance and on color, viewing angles, all of those things. Yeah. You're buying a seamless technology, it needs to look good.
Right.
And it's not, I mean, the prices have come down a lot on direct view LED, but they're still not cheap, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the LCD market, well, there's investment continuing. So some other ways. So if you're thinking about the technical problem you're trying to solve, right, it's ruggedness.
Yeah.
So there are lots of other ways that people have tried to solve it, like the big sheet of glass, right?
The big sheet of glass traps heat.
It also has some visual issues with the light bouncing around and the unseen, you see parallax. It's not ideal viewing conditions. Something else you'll see probably here this week are these X-in-1. So I call them X-in-1. I don't know if that's the name for them, where they take maybe 3 or 4 LEDs, mm-hmm. sets of LED pixels, and package them in a single SMD part.
Okay.
And there's a number of advantages for that, right? One is, uses standard production equipment that people have already invested in. It's pick and place.
Right.
Right? You don't have to invent a new manufacturing process.
Yeah, it's not chip on board or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, which has other issues.
Yeah.
So it uses a lot of the existing principles and the existing process and the existing equipment. And it does provide a more rugged solution. I think you're going to see more adoption of that because all of the LED package vendors are recognizing that they need to do something.
Yeah.
And even though micro LED is no, a mini LED with the encapsulation provides protection, there are so many other problems to solve with that technology that it's going to happen because there's like, I don't know, last time I counted like 1,500 patents filed just on production process for mini and micro LED, mostly for micro LED because try to pick up those individual dies and place them in exactly the right spot over and over again. Like, it's a hard problem. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people using elastomer, van der Waal force to do stamps. There's people using laser ablation. There's all kinds of research. You know, Apple bought LuxView. Samsung invested in Play Nitrate. There's Acceleprinter doing. There's a ton of companies. And the reason they're all invested is because of heads-up displays.
Yeah.
For VR, you need something very tiny pixels because you need very large resolution, incredibly dense and bright in order to solve some of the other inherent problems that you have when you strap a shoebox to your face and try to believe you're in a different mm-hmm. world, right? Our eyes are very smart. They know when we're trying to trick us. So there's an investment that's happening there. And for me, the analogy is if you think about the LCD market, consumer TV drove investment in all those huge LCD fabs, right? And then us in the commercial world, we took advantage of that scale, right? I think the same thing will happen with micro LED. It'll get driven by this need for VR and AR, this dream, and the investment will happen, and then eventually it'll become, you know, ready for commercialization because it'll solve. And there are a lot of problems. I mean, aside from production yield, like just how do you get those pixels down in the right place? When you make an SMD part with an LED die, so dies are grown on a wafer, they're chopped into little pieces, they package them, and then they bin them. So they know what the color, the brightness, the power, all of those things, they can sort of put the same profiles together. when you're doing micro-LED, you're putting that directly onto your substrate, and depending on the size of your substrate, you don't know until you turn that on what color profile or luminance profile you're going to get. So the calibration is incredibly challenging. It's hard.
Because you're calibrating millions of little lights.
Who are all different, right? So if you take a look at some of the micro-LED and some of the mini-LEDs that samples you'll see here, they're not uniform. Because it's hard.
Yeah.
So, again, we don't think it's ready for prime time.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So for people who are watching the LED space but not reading technical publications and all that, how can they distinguish SMD versus mini-LED versus micro-LED versus COB and all these things? And are they all being, are those terms all being applied correctly or being abused?
No, they're not all being applied correctly, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but there's definitely companies that are showing and demonstrating mini-LED and calling it micro-LED. Now, maybe I'm a display geek and it's a distinction without a difference or a difference without a distinction, but generally in the technical display world, we accept that mini-LED is, 300 microns or so, and maybe down to 100 micron, and then sub 100 is micro. And the problems that you have to solve, while they share some problems, there are some that are unique to micro-LED because, again, it's just a scale smaller. So, the production process is much more challenging. So,
Does it really matter what it is? Like, at the end of the day, it has to be reliable and look good. So, everything else is kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I get so caught up because I'm such a tech geek, right? So, I get caught up on those things. And does it really matter? No. I guess in the end is, I guess you asked, does it look good? Is the image performance good? Is the lifetime good? Can you afford it?
Yeah, that's a big one.
How do you maintain it?
Right.
How do you repair it? How does the lifetime, and then what's your application? If you look at for chip on board, which to me never made sense, when you can buy an SMD part at that same pixel pitch, why would you go pick something that's technically hard to do?
Yeah.
Right? There's no advantage. It costs more, it's harder, it doesn't look as good. So why would you pick chip on board at 0.9 millimeter, buy SMD parts.
Yeah.
And you have the added that encapsulation layer that makes it super shiny. So again, why would you go there? But if you think about this heads-up display where you need an incredibly tight resolution, dense resolution, and you need tiny pixels because they're very close to your eye, well, there's a reason why those people are investing in micro-LED. There's no other way to solve that problem.
Right?
For large size digital signage, I mean, we can get down to 0.7 millimeter with SMD parts. How much smaller do you need?
Well, the guy who I think works with you, Steve Seminario, I talked to him a year ago.
Yeah.
And he said once you get down to 0.7, that's effectively the same as what you get on an LCD in terms of pixel pitch.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about the pitch of an LCD.
Yeah, if you're looking at a 98-inch 4K display. I mean, it's pretty much in the same range. And so unless you're doing medical imaging or, something where you're looking at really dense images and you need a large size screen, which there's not so many of those applications, then why do you need to go smaller?
Yeah.
And the investment that's been made on the SMD part in that supply chain, prices keep going down. There's more and more companies producing the parts. There's more and more availability. Why try to do something different? I do think this X in one, I've heard even of them doing 9 pixels in one package. I think that's interesting, especially for rental and staging, where, you know, you don't have specialized workers to do the install. Like, you're throwing something up, you're throwing it back in a box, and you're back on the road.
Yeah, Allen key, and they tighten it, and next one on.
And you're using contingent workers in whatever city, say you're doing a rock tour or something. Like, you can't, you got to make do with the people that you have. I think for that application, it's incredibly interesting. And again, I think it's using the same processes, it's using the same manufacturing equipment. It does cost more, but it seems like it would be appropriate for the application. And repair is easier because the part, like if you have to solder 0.7, like...
You have very tiny fingers.
Well, I have tiny fingers, but my eyesight is definitely not good enough anymore. Yeah. Like it's jeweler loop. It's, and we have people that can do it.
Yeah.
That we don't need a machine. They can do it themselves. It's amazing to me. But that's not a common skill set. But if you think about a 4-in-1, most of them are coming in this like 2-1, 2-1 package. So about 2.1 millimeter square. That's a, I don't even need my glasses on to solder that kind of part. So the repairability just becomes so much easier.
Yeah. Is, are the days of LCDs numbered?
That's a good question. I don't think so.
I mean, I don't mean for TVs. We're not all going to be watching LED TVs, but...
I don't think so.
Maybe more for video walls.
I think for video, tiled LCD for video wall. But, you know, look at cube, rear projection cubes, right? People said they were done. Yeah. We just launched a new one at this show. Like, people still want them. I think it, we are seeing the adoption for direct view because there's no bezels. And that's pretty compelling, right? People don't want the bezels.
Yeah. But should they care that much? Because I've often written that, you know what, I'll look at a video wall, and if they do the creative the right way, if it's not all white or light colors, you don't even see it. And when it gets down to as skinny as it is now, like, why are you fussing about this?
Well, I mean, again, you hit on it exactly. It depends on the content, right? I'm thinking about if I'm in a control room where I'm showing, like, often sliced up data, like maybe IP cameras that are in little quadrants anyway, the bezels are kind of nice, actually, for that application. There's no advantage for seamless, right?
Yeah, it could be. If there's schematics, then it might be a problem if there's extra lines.
You know, so we joke in our boardroom, in our headquarters, we had a tiled LCD, and we, of course, changed it to LED. And one of the challenges we used to have with that, the older one, was like spreadsheets. You put a spreadsheet up, and you're always having to shove it around so that the bezel didn't go right through the middle of a row, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are applications where seamless is important. But, you know, there's cost considerations. And even though the cost keeps going down, there's people who are going to say, you know what, for the budget that I have or for the application that I have, tiled LCD is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And back to the TV market, like, there's this huge many years of investment in these LCD fabs.
Yep.
Those people are not walking away.
No.
And when OLED, you know, there was all this news about OLED, you could see the market react or the technology community react. So that's why there was all this investment in quantum dot, right? To increase the color space. And look at some of the things, like you'll see them at Display Week where they're putting like double the, they're putting a grayscale LCD behind a color LCD in order to create a better contrast, better luminance.
Yeah, somebody did that, Hisense, or somebody did that at CES.
I believe it was a BOE panel. So again, I'm super excited you're going to be at Display Week because you get to see all like the innovation stuff long before it ever hits a product.
So let's talk about that. We met last year and you said you'd just been at Display Week and chatted, and I said, so what was really interesting? And you said, the light field displays are mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And I...
Did you see the one at CES? Fovey were there with theirs.
I didn't... I don't go to CES unless somebody makes me. It's just like...
I didn't go this year either.
Too much of a shit show. But I had to go look up light field display and we're like, okay, what is that? So why was it mind-blowing and backing up on that? What the hell is it?
Okay, so it was mind-blowing for me because it's an incredibly difficult problem to solve for, like, so many reasons. So the optics is difficult, and that's the least of it.
This is effectively hologram stuff.
It's a holographic display.
Yeah.
And not one of those tricks where you get lose your finger if you touched it.
The magic spinning thing.
Yeah, not the magic spinning thing. And not the thing where you have to stand exactly in the right sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, the lenticular lens is kind of chunky. This is a true holographic display where you and I can both stand in front of a display and see a 3D image.
Yeah.
It's still in invention phase, but there's a couple of companies that are starting to make breakthroughs. And the thing that makes me most excited for them is they're not just focused on the admittedly incredibly difficult optical stack that you need, and think back to micro LED, because you're going to lose resolution and luminance as soon as you start putting anything on top of the display. So you need to start with something that's very bright and has tiny pixels. So all this investment on micro LED is all to the good for light field. But then there's all the other pieces. Like, you got to get all that data. Each individual pixel is not sending the same view in every angle.
Yeah.
It's exponentially more data to get to the screen and then to display on the screen.
Yeah.
So, like, if I was at Intel, I'd be super excited. Talk about high-performance computing, right? If I'm at NVIDIA, talk about GPU power needed to render these images. Like,
they will need an i7 for that.
At least. Maybe a whole server room of them.
Yeah.
Maybe a server farm of them.
So we won't be running this system on chip anytime soon.
No, we're not driving it with our iPhones. And I don't know. So the idea of being able to have... I'm sorry, I get on my soapbox a little bit. But this VR thing where you put a headset on...
Yeah.
First of all, I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. And... You know, they have this thing called Oculus Herpes.
Yeah.
You'll have to edit this. But anyway, the idea of putting that something on my face that somebody else has had on their face. Ugh. But from that, if you think about how we evolved, right?
I think there's an embarrassment factor, too. Like, I'm just not doing it in a public space.
And safety, too. Like, now, don't get me wrong. Like, we, Planar and Liard, actually acquired a motion capture company in Oregon a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And incredibly successful, doing all kinds of things with, like, the void. So, like, that Madame Tussauds experience in New York, that's using the motion capture cameras that they develop. I think there's applications where it makes sense. But think about how we evolved. Sitting around the fire as cavemen and women telling stories. Shared emotional experiences, right?
Yeah.
So I want you and I to be able to go in a space together to see a large display and to be able to see each other and feel each other's reactions.
Yeah.
So I start thinking about light field and what it could enable. Is like, we could go to our local stadium and see the Olympics on a big-ass screen that looks like real life. And you and I can see each other and feel the energy of the crowd and have that shared experience.
Yeah.
So that's why I get very excited about it.
So going back from that to stuff that's going to be applicable commercially in the next 2-3 years, are there things happening in the industry that people like me and others should be starting to pay attention to beyond light field?
Well, so we've talked a little bit about these coatings, increasing ruggedness, pixel pitch going down, the supply chain opening up, the prices going down, just makes it more accessible.
Yeah.
Right? I think that interactivity, because we all carry these like computers in our pockets now, that and touch is such a part of how we interact with the world, having better touch technologies in these larger scale displays than what has historically been available.
Because historically, LED based video walls have not been interactive at all, unless you're just doing gesture or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, we have the film that we talked about, the PLTS, and we sell that with an IR frame, which is the same touch system we would use with a tiled LCD that we glass bonded.
So it's like a Banto or something like that.
It's an IR frame. Yeah. It's not ShadowSense. You could use ShadowSense equally. But that's not as compelling a touch experience. Like, you know, PCAP, which it's better, right?
Yeah.
But it's just not available in these large sizes. But you're starting to see people...
That's a whole bunch of copper.
Yeah. And then it has some image quality concerns. But there are people continuing to work on new touch technologies, you know, like FTIR, so total internal reflection. There's in-cell touch, where you're able to put some of the... inside the LCD panel, so at large sizes. So you're starting to see like continued investment. Back to your question about what's happening with LCD, people are not stopping. Like there's quantum dot being used for backlight, and again I go back to mini LED. That's micro LED. That's really compelling for LCD backlights.
Yeah.
Right. You want amazing contrast. You want local dimming. You want direct lit backlights on an LCD. It'll look amazing without having any problems of image retention. And guess what? It has glass on the front. It comes with its own protection.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, last question. You're a display geek. You love this stuff. For somebody who's in the science community and as much of a geek as they're actually listening to a podcast about it, what, in terms of emerging display tech, should they, if they're going to invest some time to learn about something, what is it?
That's a good question. Well, I think there's so much my first thing is learn about OLED. Because if you're going to buy a TV, and I'm not a TV person, but if you're going to buy a TV, and a lot of people do,
yeah.
and you're going to go to Best Buy, the person who's selling to you won't know anything about it, and they will tell you whatever. So, and it's an old technology. It's 30 years in the making. There's a lot of literature. You can learn about image retention. You can learn about the mitigation techniques. Learn about it, because chances are you're going to make a sizable investment in the next few years in your home.
Yeah.
So that would be number one. And then number two, if you really want to be a geek and go a little further, there's a lot of information about micro LED, because there's a lot of research being done that you can learn and research about that. And I would start with actually understanding the fundamentals of the, what is it you're actually making?
Yeah.
And maybe even for SMD LED, like maybe that would help customers too. Like just, I know we have a class, like an LED 101 class, CTS class, where you just learn like how is a pixel made?
Yeah, well, I wrote a big ass report about all this just so people would start to understand what it is.
Yeah.
And I need to update it because it's been a year and a lot has changed.
I'm happy to help you. Seriously.
Can you write it for me and just I'll send you the Word doc?
If you send me a draft, I'll redline it for you. I'm happy to. And if you need resources, I can point you to.
Copy all and redline the whole thing.
Well, and I can point
you're
you
wrong.
To some people. So there's a really very nice man called Eric Frey. He's French, came from Sharp Labs.
Yes.
He now works at Yole.
Yole, yeah.
Lives in Portland. He's my neighbor.
Oh,
and
he's
okay. And he has learned more about micro and mini LED in the last couple of years than anyone. He's very good. And he's super nice. And he's so if you apparently you know him, so I don't need to make an introduction.
Well, I don't know him, but I know somebody who does know him, so also your neighbor says you should talk to me.
He's really a great guy. He's got a lot of deep knowledge. So.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
I was a little rambly. I hope you could edit the heck out of it.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.